Good day and welcome. I'm Tom Donahue for Philly Freedom and Tom Donahue Reports, WFIL Radio. Also want to thank Red State Talk Radio and TalkStream Live Worldwide and their podcast audience and following, and just continues to grow. And we really appreciate that. We're getting tremendous feedback and we just keep cranking out the shows. We're trying to make them the best we possibly can. So we do appreciate any feedback. And your suggestions are also welcome. You can reach out to me through email, through social media, and all the links to follow me, to find me, you can find through WFYL Radio. So we appreciate those linkages. Well, there's a lot of things to get to. And I think one of the most important subjects is, how successful will the Donald Trump campaign be? He secured the nomination, no matter what he says, no matter what he does, you know, unless there's something, an act of God, there's something catastrophic, God forbid, that happens, he is the nominee for the GOP. The most worrisome thing for me, and I think the single most important obstacle or impediment for Donald Trump is Donald Trump. You know, we've always been told that when you go to work, you leave your personal issues at home. Donald Trump can't do that. Donald Trump, and when you hit that level of business success, notoriety, you're going to have lawsuits. Some of them are nuisance lawsuits. Some of them have no merit. Some of them may have merit. And is there bias from judges? Is there bias as it relates to the media? Of course. Some of this, he has got to stop talking about it. He doesn't have to talk about everything in his life. And quite frankly, he's running to fix our country. He's running to save our nation. And so, let's say he gets a fine. Let's just say he gets sanctioned. Big deal. So what? And sometimes, if a judge thinks that his decision could be clouded, he may even be more impartial. It doesn't always work against you just because something seems obvious. Because someone has Mexican heritage, although born American and raised American, doesn't necessarily mean the judge is biased. And that's what you have lawyers for. That's, or if you have the legal skills, you know, you put in for a motion for his recusal. You can do that with prosecutors. You can do that with judges. Most of the time doesn't happen. But at least he could set legal precedent that could be appealed, that if this judge shows, you know, obvious bias and he didn't remove himself, or he was not removed based on the courts, you know, then, you know, I mean, he's got legal ground, legal standing. But it's just one thing after another. And it's just bothersome. You know, and then his use of words. I mean, I went to a pretty good school. It wasn't Ivy League, but, you know, quite frankly, you don't have to go to necessarily an Ivy League school to be well-educated. You could even be self-educated. So, again, I'm not one of those people that, at the time that I went to college, it was about 20% of the population, one-fifth. And doesn't mean that everybody in that 20% at the time that were college graduates were, or graduating as college graduates, were from really good schools. So, you know, and so now I think it's not even quite a third that can say that they're college graduates. And again, maybe about a tenth or a quarter of those really have degrees that are worthwhile, and they really got quality educations. But that's another issue for another day. But Donald Trump went to the best schools. And I don't know why Donald Trump's vocabulary, and I don't know why Donald Trump's grammar and syntax is so poor. I don't know. And again, we can all slip up. We all do. I do. I think I've caught almost every anchor, every writer, practically every person in the media has made mistakes. And that's okay. That's acceptable, because it's difficult, especially if you're doing something in a spontaneous way. I'm seeing more and more online publications with typos. I don't know how they you know, especially now when you have spell check and you have ways of remedying that before you hit publish. But nevertheless, Donald Trump is his own worst enemy. And even some of his top supporters are now saying, stop it already. I mean, Hillary has so much baggage. There's so much to attack. There's so many issues that he should be talking about. And instead, he has to bring his own personal stuff. What happens if Rosie O'Donnell wants to start another feud with Donald Trump and he's on the campaign trail? Is he going to respond to Rosie O'Donnell? Is he going to respond to somebody in the gossip rags or perhaps in the celebrity reality, non-reality culture? I don't know. But Donald Trump has got to wise up. I mean, we have our entire nation state, our culture, our civilization is at stake. And instead, he's worrying about his own personal stuff. And any insult, any criticism, anything that he thinks is unfair, he has to bring to the table. Real men don't do that. Men of character and strong character, they don't do that. Now, I'm not saying keep everything bottled up. The people that we respect the most are those that show that strength of character, that they don't sweat the small stuff. They don't bring their personal issues and baggage to the workplace, especially in the political arena. We've even seen weak... How many times have we seen politicians that were very weak, very feeble, and nevertheless, they were able to put aside their personal issues, you know, the personal problems, and continue to administer or to operate in the political realm and conduct their duties and not dwell upon, woe me and what, you know, whatever the personal attacks, insults, or issues or personal tragedies. And you know, you see many people that are beset with major personal problems and issues, and they deal with it or they at least, you know, keep it private. I just don't understand. I just really hope that Donald Trump doesn't destroy Donald Trump's campaign, because that's the road he's going down now. You know, people are going to get tired of it. Stick to the breadbasket issues. Stick to, you know, those 5 or 10 major themes and major programs that you want to work on. Go after all the vulnerabilities and all the weaknesses and all the Hillary baggage, and there's plenty of that, and we're going to get to it. But Hillary is now besting Trump because Trump continues to prove that he has issues with his temperament. He has issues with bringing his personal stuff to the political arena. That's the way I see it. And so I'm disappointed, I'm frustrated. And I have to say, if it continues, and if he doesn't start really I'm going to start thinking that maybe the fix is in, that maybe this was a complete political sham. And I don't want to have to think that, and I don't want to believe that. And I hope and pray it's not the case that he's going to throw in the towel and let Hillary win. This was all about political expediency for, I don't know, for his companies, for his celebrity, for whatever. So it's a very frustrating time for me, because with all his personal foibles, with all the issues I have with Donald Trump, I still decided, and I'm still in his camp, but this has got to end. It has to stop. I'll be right back. Tom Donahue. Tom Donahue Reports, Philly Freedom. Welcome back, Tom Donahue, Philly Freedom, Tom Donahue Reports, putting America first, new world order dead last, liberty lover, freedom fighter, and truth seeker. Thank you so much for joining us for this broadcast. Well, here's another quote from Donald Trump. Look at my African American over here. Look at him. Who talks like that? I mean, I truly believe he's not racist. I truly believe that Donald Trump is a fair-minded person. Of course, if you attack him, if you criticize him, that's a whole different story. But I think that he's worked with so many different groups over the years, and living in the New York City, I just don't see him. And I think that he's never exhibited, and no one's ever accused him being a racist, except when he entered politics and started criticizing the refugees and trying to put a pause on that to try to vet and figure out, you know, why are so many assassins, so many terrorists coming in with these refugees. So, and yes, he was talking about profiling for a short time. You know, he was talking about a profiling and a pause just to try to figure out why is this the case. And building the wall, and some harsh comments and criticism, the critiques he's had for the illegal invasion. So, but other than that, in terms of his personal and professional dealings, there's never been the specter, there's never been the insinuation that he was racist in any of his dealings. Why do you put out, I don't understand, he's very repetitive. He speaks in broken sentences. Many of his choice of wording is very poor, to say the least. But then you'll find him, at times, when he's relaxed, he's at Trump Tower, and he's on video, and he's with Sean Hannity, or he's with even those that are critical that you would see as the opposition, he can come across very smooth and very relaxed and very seemingly even keel, you know. I mean, it's a good temperament. And I also think, I said this from the very beginning, I think I was one of the few to say this, get rid of the ball caps. You know, you're a billionaire. You don't dress that way. You don't wear ball caps in your normal life. And I just thought it was always silly. Now, I do believe that he does relate generally to the common man pretty well. Hey, if you want to relax, then dress down. You don't wear a suit with a ball cap. I mean, it looks ridiculous. And that would be my, you know, so I have my own views, but I'm not going to judge him for a ball cap. So these are just some things that concern me, is that when you see these statements, and they are direct, not out of context statements, and also that person, he just happened to be in the audience. Apparently he said that he was just curious and somewhat interested in what Donald Trump had to say, but he's not a supporter. But although he didn't take that he wasn't offended by the comment. And you know how sometimes you have an uncle or you have a grandparent, or sometimes they'll say something and you know they don't mean it the way it came out. Well, you might even have a husband or wife. You know, you might have a brother or sister. And you go, oh, they didn't mean anything by it. I know that's the case with Trump. You're running for the highest office. You're being scrutinized by, you know, the wretched scum and sleaze of the national press corps. And take a moment of prayer before you go out on that stage or before you take that interview. Meditate, focus, you know, collect your thoughts, you know, play some music. You know, I don't know what he does. Maybe he just rolls with whatever. You know, and again, I'm someone that generally is more spontaneous in the moment, go with the flow. However, I try to prepare myself prior, not over-prepare, not be too structured, but at least have some information and at least have some roadmap as to what I want to do and what the goals of that meeting, the goals of that broadcast, the goals of that presentation may be. So I just think Donald Trump is just not preparing. He's winging it. I mean, that's really what Donald Trump is doing. And some people like that to some degree. But now we're getting into, Now we're getting into those innings that matter. We're getting into the games that actually count. You know, like when pro football has some summer games, and you know, it counts for players because they can only hold a 53-player roster, and so they're competing for jobs. But many of the players already know they have the jobs, and they're playing not to be injured. They're playing to show that they still can play, or the new players can prove that they actually have what it takes. But it doesn't, the score doesn't matter. Now the score matters. Okay, you know, you're now in the big leagues. You're now playing for the win versus the loss. You're playing for, I mean, our nation. Everything you say and do now will matter even more. And you should be more prepared. You should be more on your game. You should be more about the winning. And it just seems to me that Donald Trump, it looks like he's pulling it together. It looks like he's getting more organized. It looks like he's on top of things. And then there's this, like, setback after setback after setback. And, you know, he can criticize Romney and various other Republican nominees all he wants. You should have learned from their mistakes. And it's great that you go after with the furor that you do. And I want a vigorous challenge to Hella Shelry. But I also want someone that you say, wow, he came with the facts. You know, he really made a great presentation, a compelling argument. You want a guy that, so when he challenges, or even if he attacks, you're going to say, well, that was on the money. That really, you know, made sense. That really had huge impact. You know, that is something the nation's agenda, the nation's issues. You know, our rights and duties of that office and credibility matters, and presentation and packaging also matter. You're going to be judged on everything, so it does concern me. I'm very upset with the way Donald Trump and his team are managing this campaign. You know, I've just seen too many campaigns that derail themselves rather than the opponent derailing them. And I don't think Hillary Clinton has an iota of a chance of derailing Donald Trump. It's only Donald Trump that can derail Donald Trump. It's only Donald Trump that can stop Donald Trump. You know, he proved that there was not a single Republican, there wasn't the entire party, there wasn't the establishment that could derail him. So if they couldn't do it, Hillary sure cannot do it. The press will not be able to do it. They'll all be conspiring factions that will play some role. But in terms of the actual derailing of Donald Trump, it's depending on which Donald Trump shows up, depending on which Donald Trump is engineering and managing this campaign. So that's the way I see it. That is my point of view as it relates to Donald Trump. Now we're going to get into other issues. Matter of fact, I'm just going to give you a little teaser here before we go to the next segment. And we're going to talk about, well, the Secret Service agents that I talked about in prior broadcasts, they are now coming forward. And they are talking about, you know, Bill and Hill. And that's getting more interesting. Oh, Bilderberg 2016, the world elite to meet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna be covering the Bilderberg conference. You know, the world elitist. You know, the corporate moguls. The billionaires. And those that are so prominent in business and in politics, and media, and academia, and beyond. Now, here's something that I think has really troubled the nation, that's plagued the nation. That is O.J. Simpson, and that case, and what that did to divide America. And O.J. Simpson is now believed by, there was a recent article that talked about the fact that they think O.J. Simpson, when he's released from prison, probably within the next year or two, they feel O.J. Simpson is going to confess. He's going to actually admit that he did the killings. And the other thing is, speaking of, we're talking about race, we're talking about the nation divided. At one time, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali divided the nation. And a lot of it had to do with his becoming a Muslim and his protest to the Vietnam War and willing to serve time rather than serve time in. And I totally, at that time, agreed with his stand that that was a senseless war and we had no right and there was no justifiable reason to be in Vietnam. And people say, well, you may have seen it differently. No, as a child, I often wondered. I said, what's going on here? You know, this whole thing didn't make sense. So the difference between an O.J., obviously, and Muhammad Ali, although they both had were conflicted in their lives. I mean, Ali had multiple marriages, and here was a guy that was almost, he was considered like the villain, and he became the hero in time, and went well beyond his whole boxing career and the impact he had in the sport. And was he the greatest as it related to his in-ring skills? Well, we'll talk about that too, because I have some interesting insights on that and how it relates to life. So we'll be right back. I'm Tom Donahue, Philly Freedom. Tom Donahue reports. Hold tight. We'll be right back.
Do you know what's in your body soap? Well, I didn't know the answer until about 5 years ago when I looked at the label of my soap and was shocked to see all the chemicals. For my entire life, I had been assaulting the largest organ of my body, my skin, and to think my children were using it too. Well, a lot has changed since then. Today, my family and I operate Stone City Farms, where we make and sell all natural goat milk soap using fresh goat milk from goats we raise on our farm. Our mission at Stone City Farm is to produce high quality, all natural goat milk soap for people who want a fresh, unrefined natural product. At Stone City Farms, we offer scented and unscented soaps and a signature line of gift sets customizable to your needs. To see what our customers are saying, go to StoneCityFarm.com. Use the code NATURAL for a 20% discount. That's StoneCityFarm.com, code NATURAL for 20% off your order. You never know what could be hiding in your soap.
FoodForLiberty.com sells high-quality storable foods from Numana. Whether you want to be prepared in the event of an emergency or an outdoor sports enthusiast, FoodForLiberty.com has your prepackaged single-serve packs or kits for the entire family. Numana is known for high-quality, great-tasting, GMO-free, super nutritious food with no chemical preservatives. With a 25-year shelf life, you can't beat the feeling of being food secure when you need it most. Right now, FoodForLiberty.com is offering a special gift, a heavy-duty Survivor dry storage box designed for extreme bug-out conditions. This storage box is built to last, includes compass, signaling mirror, and is yours free with a $50 order. Go to foodforliberty.com right now and pick up your quality storable foods from Numana. To get the Survivor dry storage box, use promo code LIBERTY. It makes good sense to be prepared. Go to foodforliberty.com.
Welcome back. Tom Donahue, Philly Freedom, putting America first, new world order dead last. Tom Donahue reports. So glad you can be with us, serving the greater Philadelphia area and beyond. Several subjects on the discussion plate here. And there are times that on the tabletop here, I may just go with a single or solely significant subject, kind of in a lot of different directions today. And I think because of the news cycle and the there's a lot of things that are happening that I feel led to discuss, some of them more important than others. But I do think that when you have someone of the stature of a Muhammad Ali, an icon, and someone that they're equating him almost on the level of Mother Teresa, I think that's a little far-fetched. Now, do I think he was a goodwill global ambassador? Probably so. Do I think he did a lot to divide the nation and unite the nation? Yes. Do I feel that he was militant and strident in his personality and behavior? Yes. He was nonviolent, and he served his time based on the fact he was not going to serve in the U.S. military. Just imagine the career he would have had if he hadn't lost that time, and if he had been able to continue his fighting career and high caliber matches that he would have been involved with would have been just unbelievable. But you know, that's the way life is. Like Michael Jordan has what, six NBA titles? He probably would have had 10 if he hadn't decided to go off and play baseball. But you know, we all do things. We all feel like we need to go in a different direction. We need, you know, maybe we've just had too much of something, and you know, or we just want we're curious, and we you know, we have one life to live, and sometimes we get waylaid, or we get off on tangents and do things that are in an ancillary way. And I think that that's kind of what happened with Michael Jordan, was that yeah, he had some baseball talent, but it wasn't. I would think that you would know that how good you are, and he just wasn't. I mean, he was good, but he wasn't great. He wasn't even that good. And then you saw what happened to that team when a player like that left to go play a different sport. You know, they didn't win the title, and they didn't. And so that's the way it works. There are a couple other things I want to say about the fight game, and that is that there was a lot of speculation that. Was there a phantom punch and two fights? One was the Sonny Liston fight, the first one. And the other was the George Foreman fight. I mean, if you look at the footage up close, you may find, and you know, I can't speak for anyone else's eyes, but I found that some of these punches were a little on the light side, or a little dubious and questionable. And there was a lot of betting money. And there was a lot of influence that they had over Sonny Liston because of, you know, him being an ex-con and his you know, prison ties and mob ties potentially, or at least they thought there might have been. So I remember watching a movie about Sonny Liston, and even his death, there was a mysterious circumstance surrounding that. When you have these fighters that are brutal, that are just insanely vicious, and then they get tamed by someone that you're going, I'm not so sure about that. But I feel that the fix is in on a lot of things in life. And sadly, many of these sports have been corrupted. And we just don't know. And we also know that there were a few decisions that Ali got that, you know, with the rope-a-dope and all that, that maybe he was outpointed. They still gave it to him. And then you could say, well, he fought on a little too long, and it was kind of sad that I think three of the five losses he had were as an aging fighter and someone that really should have given it up, because all that rope-a-dope, you know, might have been, I could see that potentially being a strategy in a fight or two, but I always wondered if I were in boxing. And it is kind of a cerebral sport too, if your brains aren't knocked out, you know, and you're not punch drunk. And you say, wait a minute, if this guy's going to lay against the ropes, and the best I'm going to do is maybe get a couple shots, you might get a rib shot, an abdomen shot, or maybe the chest, whatever, the arms, that's not going to be a knockout. And it's not likely going to win you the match. So why wouldn't you go out to the center of the ring and just wait? Just say, I'm ready to fight you. But we're going to do it in the center of the ring. You know, how did so many guys get suckered into that? I just don't understand. If you know that's going to be part of the strategy. And I just thought he was a much better fighter than playing rope-a-dope. Also, I mean, he was quick as lightning, and he really had some tremendous skills, natural ability. Now, let's talk about the verbal skills. Well, you may or may not know this, but Muhammad Ali was a big fan of professional wrestling. We'll get to that point, that he actually had a match and had some other antics and involving the WWE. At that time, it was the World Wrestling Federation, WWF. Muhammad Ali said he learned so much from professional wrestling in terms of being able to do that jawboning and be able to... If you really look at the best of what professional wrestling brought in terms of the showmanship and the mic skills... That's what Ali watched. And so he incorporated what he saw in professional wrestling, Gorgeous George and various others. If there hadn't been professional wrestling, Muhammad Ali may have been just a quiet guy. He may have just gone about his business. But it was those antics and those techniques that he learned in terms of his presentation that made him this charismatic figure. And yes, there was an actual match between a professional wrestler and a boxer. They did not match him against Bruno Sammartino, or a guy that was actually really tough in real life and was super strong and very athletic. So they had him against a Japanese wrestler, Ayanoki, that he acted like he was a lobster or a crab, and he was on the mat most of the time and just throwing kicks. So Ali ended up with bruises, welts on his legs. It was, I don't know if you saw it, I don't know if you read about it, but it was one of the most boring things, and it was really, but it was tied to other, at that time, this was before WrestleManias, it was tied to closed circuit TV, you know, and it was just prior to pay-per-views, you know, that came a little bit later. But there were a lot of people that were going into these arenas and watching it on closed circuit. And then there were certain venues that had like wrestling matches and maybe even boxing matches. But it was a big deal. I remember going to the Philadelphia Spectrum. Somehow I think it was my brother, maybe you know other family members. I just don't remember. But I remember going and seeing something like that. At least like that's my recollection, and I'm sticking to it. So Ali, the great showman, learned many of the tricks of the trade from professional wrestling. Then, right before this match that they signed, and I don't think Ali wanted to be upstaged by someone like Bruno Sammartino or someone that may have decided to put some moves on him and embarrass him or hurt him. So this was a technique, I guess this was a strategy worked out that ended up being extremely boring, and I think they called it a draw. It was an exhibition. As Sylvester Stallone so aptly put today, that Muhammad Ali was the real Apollo Creed. Now that's a whole other story that you can get into as to how Rocky, you know, the movie came about, and the fact is that it was based on Muhammad Ali fighting Chuck Wepner and this extreme underdog that, you know, took him to the limit. At that time, there was 15 rounds back in the day. So Ali has this wrestling connection in terms of, you know, how he became the showman. Then he also, beyond being the showman and the fighter, he became the activist. And he had his own religious and political views, and he had his conversion to the Nation of Islam. Had the name change. So he had a dramatic impact on sports, on the culture. And the point is that he was a nonviolent person outside the ring. But he stood up for principle. But I remember at the time, I remember relatives, I remember the climate, that he did cause a tremendous racial divide early on, which is not unusual. But then he was this unifying factor as time went on, and he became the hero rather than the villain. But then again, isn't that like professional wrestling? The white hat, the black hat, the good guy, the bad guy. So anyway, I just thought I would share some of my thoughts and sentiments as it related to Ali. And I think people should keep so-called icons in perspective, you know, whether it's especially sports or celebrities and even political figures and religious figures, with the exception of maybe the Thomas Jeffersons of our time. And that's the reason I call this Philly Freedom, is because it's not about just Philadelphia. It's not about Philly cheesesteaks. It's the Rocky statue and movie. It's more about the founders and the framers, the Liberty Bell, the Constitution Center, Independence Hall, the birthplace, the cradle of liberty. That's what this program is about. The spirit of 76. We'll be right back. Hold tight, Tom Donahue.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years? and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall, there's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of this product.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
To order your 2 month supply, call now toll free 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Health in America is becoming a top priority. Or maybe I should say, good health in the world is becoming a top priority. Maintaining a healthy body can be challenging. How about letting Life Change Tea help you? Our tea, you make, you drink, and you benefit. Our unique blend of 8 different herbs helps you maintain good digestion, a healthy colon, and detoxes harmful toxins and parasites out of your body. And you know what? It tastes great! If you're wanting a change, a life change when it comes to health, log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. When you log on to our mobile-friendly website, you can read all the numerous testimonies of how Life Change Tea has helped so many people. We carry many, many beneficial products that help your health and keep you on track. GetTheTea.com. Kind of gets in your head, doesn't it? GetTheTea.com.
We're back. Tom Donahue, Philly Freedom on WFIL Radio. I want to thank Red State Talk Radio and Talk Stream Live. Putting America First, New World Order, Dead Last. This program embodies freedom. And this is the Freedom Station. They're working for your liberty. We are working for your liberty. The reason, and some people have questioned, why Philly? Well, there's a lot of reasons why Philly. But most of it's historic. Most of it is foundational. Most of it is about the founders and the framers and the birthplace of our nation, the cradle of liberty. And so motivationally, inspirationally, and even from a practical sense, that I'm calling this Philly Freedom. It is the spirit of 76 that lives on. It's freedom forward. Okay? All right. Now, speaking of that Philadelphia mix, I didn't realize that Muhammad Ali had lived in Cherry Hill. You know, I guess for some of the matches he was training for, you know, Joe Frazier, etc. So he had a residence, and people were visiting, I guess, all the homesteads and, you know, all the places that were memorable as it related to Muhammad Ali. And, you know, I was talking about the fact that he has ties to professional wrestling. Matter of fact, I'm sure that on Monday Night Raw, they will be talking about that because they have a celebrity wing or other athletes that may not have, they may have participated in a match or an exhibition, and then they get, especially if they're of high notoriety, they will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. And so I'm sure they're going to be talking about that. But I remember back in the day when they were promoting this wrestler versus boxer for this closed circuit, I guess it was almost like a pay-per-view, but it wasn't. They didn't have the technology to do as much as they do in the 80s as they did in the 70s, and so during one of these TV tapings, they had Muhammad Ali come out, and at that time Gorilla Monsoon was kind of a semi-retired wrestler. I think he was still doing some matches and some commentating, but whatever the case is, Ali came out there and started his jibber jabber and his verbal sparring, and so Muhammad Ali decided to get in the ring, and Gorilla Monsoon, that was his wrestling name. Actually, he lived in Cherry Hill, strangely enough. So Gorilla Monsoon, who was, you know, his best wrestling days were in the 60s, he picks up Muhammad Ali and puts them on top of his shoulders and then does a slam. And so, I guess they call it, maybe it was the gorilla slam, I don't know. But anyway, and so that was Muhammad Ali's introduction to being in the ring with a professional wrestler. So, sadly, I'm calling it pay-per-view, but it really was closed circuit. It was not quite the same thing. But it was a where you had to actually go to a arena location. Now, I don't know if there was any setups that I think maybe there might have been some other facilities that if they had some kind of satellite feed that you could see it. But it was the technology was still embryonic. It really wasn't quite there for the way they did things in the 80s and beyond, like for WrestleManias and whatnot. The thing that I wanted to point out was that they say he's the greatest of all time. Well, if you look at his record, it would not indicate that he was the greatest of all time. If you look at his opponents, some of them are pretty darn good, and he beat them. But he also lost. And it wasn't, and all those losses didn't come at the end of his career, you know, in his late 30s, almost 40 years of age. The other thing is that I remember on ABC, the Worldwide Sports, back in the day, they decided to input all the fight statistics, all the analytics of these matches that Ali had, and the undefeated Rocky Marciano, and then they with all that information, this is when this was like kind of early on with the use of computers and trying to, you know, to analyze and simulate certain things and outcomes, and they figured that based on everything that they knew of the fighters, and this was, you know, one's retired, the other is in his prime and didn't have those losses at the end, and so the computer still made the decision, you know, based on all the data, that Rocky Marciano would have knocked out Muhammad Ali in the 13th round. So he would have been the clear victor. Well, when that happened, and I didn't even know this until recently, they decided to contact Ali and Rocky Marciano and ask them if they would do a video rendition. They could tape this fight. You know, and so they actually did that. And so what happened was Rocky Marciano had been retired, and so he got himself back in shape in order to do that. And Muhammad Ali had a lot of respect for Rocky Marciano. Remember, Rocky Marciano retired at 49-0. He said there's no one else to fight. Now, he was a clubber. He was a brawler. You know, he didn't have the finesse of a lot of boxers, but he just had a lot of heart. And he trained like crazy. I mean, he'd go into training for 2-3 months, 4 months, but he really took every fight seriously. If he would have been more mindful of his record and his legacy, although right now we don't know if the featherweight Mayweather, whether he will in fact fight another, I think, was it 48-0, I think. So he may actually get to that 49-0 or 50-0. But I know Larry Holmes tried. I know there were various others, and they just that it's something about that magical number that no one has been able to tie or break. And but yeah, he could have gone to probably 55-0. At least, I don't know why, if you're that close, why not go to 50-0? Why leave it at 49? And then sadly, you know, he died tragically in an airplane crash. So and so he left at an early age, but nevertheless he could have continued fighting. He could have some would say pad his record. He didn't want to just fight for the sake of fighting, and he didn't want to just, you know, beat the bum of the month club. So he just said that he didn't really feel there was any challengers at that time that he hadn't taken on that was worthy of people paying the money and have him come and for him to train and be away from his family. Because at that time, these boxers took it seriously. Boxing was a big deal. Boxing was a premier sport. I mean, now UFC, even WWE wrestling, you know, a lot of obscure sports or have a stronger following. They'll get more pay-per-views than boxing. So boxing, they're trying to somehow resuscitate the sport, especially the heavyweight division, and it's almost useless. I mean, it's almost senseless. I mean, it's not going anywhere. But that, you know, things sometimes are cyclical. So that gives you a little more background on that. And of course, you know, in the Philadelphia area, there, you know, boxing has always been a big deal, you know, with Smoking Joe Frazier and Bernard Hopkins and many other fighters. So, so Ali actually lived in the area. And, you know, so everyone has their own impressions. Everybody has their own, you know, memories. And I always think that when someone passes, so much of, unless it's the media, may dredge things up. But I think we tend to remember more of the positives, of course. And maybe that's healthy, you know, for us to, you know, focus more on the positives rather than dwell on the negatives. And I guess that's when you see at funerals, you know, with eulogies, you know, it's for the most part, it's the good things that are talked about, you know, treasuring those memories. But it was really sad that someone of his stature, you know, an accomplishment, if someone would have said, don't be a dummy and do rope-a-dope, you know, okay, don't fight Larry Holmes and don't provoke him. He must have realized that his health was starting to decline, and he wasn't training the way he once did. And he wasn't the same fighter in the later 30s. Remember, the later 30s now is like for us now, it's like in our 40s because, you know, we have better nutrition and better sports science and all that. So here he ends up with Parkinson's. I think it's pretty much universally accepted that it was the blunt force trauma of allowing himself to be hit so often. And I think that you don't see boxers doing rope-a-dope, but you do see a lot of them that will kind of get in the corner there and just hope they can survive. But every time that head is hit, you know, that brain, even though it's encased in a secure skull, at least you would think, it is being penetrated. It is, you know, you are having your bell rung, and that brain swells, and the brain tissue gets damaged, and it affects the nerves and affects so many other things. And it's just a shame, and you see this with a lot of the football players. So many of the football players, you know, in their 50s and 60s, they're shot. You know, they can't remember many things. You say, well, they got paid a lot of money, and they should have known. Well, a lot of people, look at back in the day when smoking, people said, I don't think it's really that bad. I mean, some things to us today seem so obvious, whereas back in the day, it wasn't so obvious. But I think more has to be done to protect players, no matter how much money they make. It's irrelevant. It's, you know, regardless. I mean, it's you say, oh well, they're getting paid a lot of money, and they know that it's a physical sport. It's a sport that of collision and contact, and you may get hurt. Well, it's, why not minimize the injuries? Why not minimize the blunt force trauma to the skull? It just makes perfect sense. Well, I still have a lot of fight in me, and most of it's verbal sparring, of course. And we're going to get to so many subjects this week and over the summer. And I'm so appreciative of each and every one of you for listening, for letting others know about this program. Remember, our start time on the radio in Philadelphia is 6 p.m. weekdays. On Red State, on digital, it's 10 p.m. And then 24/7, we have our podcast downloads, we have our podcast players, and we have a 24/7 station. So you can go to TomDonahueReports.webstarts.com or TomDonahue.podomatic.com. And also, you can go to WFYL Radio, and they will be helpful. And so will Red State Talk Radio and linking to my site and programs. Till we meet again, I'm Tom Donahue for Philly Freedom. Tom Donahue Reports. Have a great night.
Thank you.